We live in interesting times. As the Chinese would offer us, that is no good thing. We look forward to the eclipse on Monday and the hours of traffic it will bring to our town. And we look back on the disappointing and eventually tragic events of Charlottesville, the thugs and losers who came out to support a theory that's on the wrong side of history, that one race, one ethnicity, one religion is triumphant over the other. I went to speak at a rally Sunday to reject and condemn the violence and the hatred that was spoken and acted in Charlottesville. Not my best speech ever. And to struggle with a bullhorn, which I wouldn't recommend. But afterwards, I ran into two congregants. Mark Siegel took a picture. You may have seen it on Facebook. But I also ran into Wendy Bach and later spoke to Robin Brown, who had been there. And they were appreciative of what I said, and they understood why I wasn't comfortable, which I'll get to in just a moment. So this parasha has two great themes, among others. The theme of alleviating poverty and the theme of kashrut, repeated and expanded upon, or in different ways, from Parshat Shmini. So one of my rabbi's favorite moments is the question of the chassidah, the stork, why it's not kosher. So chassid means pious. Hasidim, both described in Talmud and in Germany in the Middle Ages and in Eastern Europe in the 1800s, were pietists of different stripes. So we'd think, Talmud notes, that the Hasid would be kosher. It's got a beautiful name that indicates that it is a sacred animal. So the Kotzko Rebbe, writing I think at the end of the 1800s, he actually never wrote. He spoke and was later recorded. The problem lies in the chassidah, as the Talmud knew it, being benevolent to her own kind. The problem is it wasn't enough. It's not enough to love your family and those who look like you and those who are in your group and narrow circle. That's not sufficient to be truly pious. That our ambit of concern must be much greater. As I said, we're living in interesting times. Would that we were living in quiet and dull times like the play Our Town. We live in a moment that in some ways fulfills the curse of the ethics of Torah. I spoke about this once in the chapel service. I think the worst ethical component, aside from the morality of Sdom, or maybe connected to it, is revealed in this week's parasha in chapter 12, where everyone does kol hayashar be'enav, all that which is direct in his eyes, every man for himself. Every man, every person assessing by his own desires, his own needs, his own wants, what he or she might do without much regard for one's fellow. We're entering a time of potential chaos, certainly a time of encroaching violence. We are right to be scared. Fear is an appropriate reaction. Our Haftarah, which Miriam read so well, in our Haftarah, Isaiah describes that I made the smith and the instruments for havoc. Those instruments have always been among us. One of the things I said at that gathering, it's, I think, the very Jewish opinion that humankind is neither good nor bad, neither wicked nor perfected, but somewhere in the middle, somewhere in tension. Maimonides says that at this season, we should think of ourselves as 50% good and 50% evil, and we are on the scale right in the middle. Mark Borowitz glosses that. He was my teacher at the drug and alcohol rehab where I worked. We should actually view ourselves as 51% bad, and that the goal right now is just a 2% change. I like that. I don't agree. I went to see Dolly Parton a few years ago, and I realized what conservatism is. It's the thought that things used to be better, and progressive liberal politics are the thought that is the thought that things will get better. And it's not uncommon, not unreasonable, that African Americans and Jews and women should more often find themselves on the side of liberal politics because our fate has traditionally been poor, and we can only assume that the future will be better. The truth is, I don't believe either of those statements. I don't think humankind ever used to be better or worse. I think we always had an id and a superego and an ego. I think there were always implements for violence. I think human nature is beset with aggression and sexual drive and drive to power and will to power, libido dominandi, as I think Augustine called it. That's just who we are. Social scientists and social biologists will point out it's part of biology, it's part of reproduction and evolutionary theory that you would strive to protect your own, that you would strive to transmit your own genes, whether through violence or sexual aggression, that you would look after those who look most like you first, because they're more likely to have the same genes. We don't live in a better or a worse time. We live in the same time with different people and different technologies and new names. As I taught, I think it was in the Beit Midrash this week, our Pirkei Avot tells us that we should pray for the welfare of the state, because were it not for the state, we would swallow each other alive. Which is to say that rule of law is a very powerful thing. If you look at Papua New Guinea, I read about this about a decade ago, Papua New Guinea has about 800 different languages, which indicates about 800 different groups, tribes, ethnicities, nations within one country, because everything is separated by mountains and valleys. So my sense is that people lived in a valley for so many generations that they fostered their own language. And so Papua New Guinea, existing in some sort of pre-industrial or early industrial state even now, has constant internecine violence. People will wander over a hill and raid either another nation, another people, another language, or another clan with bows and arrows and sticks and knives. And the level of violence and killing at times surpasses even World War II per capita. There never was a better or worse time. As I mentioned, our parsha speaks very clearly about poverty, although economically not very accurately, but we'll go into that another time. And what it says is, Naton titein lo, velo yira levavecha betitcha lo, ki biglala devar zeh yivrecha adonai elohecha bechol maasecha bechol mashlach yadecha. You should surely give to the poor and not hold it hard in your heart, biglal, because of, for it is that God is going to bless you through these things. So our sages play with that word, biglal. And there was no clear linguistics and philology in the era of our Talmud. They just made word plays. They didn't really assess what the true root is, the way linguists and Germans in the 1900s might have, but they played with the words and the sounds. So Eleazar bar Kapar, HaKapar, said, you should always be prayed to be spared from poverty, because if not you, it will fall on your son or your grandson, because it is biglal, that thing. Rabbi Ishmael follows that up by saying, it is a wheel, a galal, a golel. Gilgal, the place where Saul was anointed, that it's a stone that turns. It's a cycle. Not just poverty, but the cycle of human animosity and aggression and atrocity. We lived through it, our people and others, in the Shoah of World War II, but not long after there were other atrocities, 1990s in Bosnia, more recently in Sudan and Syria now. Human beings don't get better. They just enact their horrors with different technologies and at different times. And it's very tempting right now, and this is where I began to be really uncomfortable at that rally. It's very tempting to match rage with rage, to match violence with violence, to match in and out group with in and out group, just to frame the other as the other, the unknown, the fearful. And I want to be clear, because it's going to get close to the statement of moral equivalence, but I'm not implying moral equivalence. not implying that Nazis should be tolerated. There is, I've lost the name of the word, but there is a window coined by a political scientist of acceptable, what?
The Overton window.
The Overton, thank you. Wow, God, what a group of smart people. If I forget who said something, Miriam's there, you're there, it's just wonderful. The Overton window is the window of acceptable discourse, and you know, anarchism and Nazism were not accepted, and the Overton window is expanding. Not okay, problematic at best. So as I noted, it's really tempting to meet rage with rage, violence with violence, anger with anger, resentment with resentment, bigotry with a kind of bigotry. We live in a country, by the way, where we're approaching a time where Republicans don't marry Democrats. Most people think, it's funny but not, most people would rather have their children marry out of their faith than out of their political affiliation. Strange time. So we're tempted to do as Torah tells us, to sweep out the evil in our midst aggressively, completely. Don't shield them. Step forward first. Raise towns. Those are the things Torah tells us. Unless you think that it's only other peoples that commit atrocities, we are told not so many parshiot ago to commit genocide on other peoples. It's in our soul too. It's in our system. It's in our culture. Don't whitewash our tradition. Don't imagine that we are not human too, that we have the Yetzer Hara, the wicked impulse, blended like a yin and a yang with the Yetzer Tov. So Bachya, thank God, Bachya ibn Pekuda in the 11th century says, these commands shouldn't be viewed as an advocacy for cruelty or vengeance, but as a kind of mercy. Mercy killings, let's not dwell too long on that, but let's remember that our tradition, in the main, wants us to shy away from violence and vengeance, and to consider the Kabbalah, the Sfira, those parts of God that are compassionate, those parts of ourself that are compassionate. All of this, says our Parsha, poverty especially, says our Parsha is a test. We get that word a lot. God tests Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. The journey through the wilderness was a test. Life is a kind of test. We're told in this week's Parsha, beware the lure, the snare. The snare of violence, the snare of other people's practices, the snare of Kol Yashar Beinav. They do it their way, so why not do just as bad to them? Don't have base thoughts, don't harden your heart, don't worship me the way they do, but hold fast to God. So what's hard about this sermon, what's hard about that gathering, is I don't have the right words. I don't have any idea what we're supposed to do at this moment. I saw some things that scare me on both sides, to be honest. And again, I'm not trying to make moral equivalents. But at that rally, there were, let's say, 200 people and a lot of yelling and a lot of cheering and hissing and booing. Maybe what they were cheering for was more morally noble than xenophobia and nationalism and Nazism. And they weren't cheering, the Jews are going to replace us. But they were aggressive. They were mob-like. Robin saw it. Wendy saw it. And I remember giving that speech over a bullhorn. Don't give speeches over bullhorns. It's funny, but I mean it actually seriously. It's a terrifying experience to speak over a bullhorn because you know what they want to hear. They wanted me to say things that they could cheer and boo at. At one point, I paused. But bullhorn is also technologically not a great way to give a speech because it's very hard to hear. I paused and looked to a friend, and she was going like this to tell me to be louder. So as I paused, they started booing and hissing something I had said, or cheering, I can't recall, and I said, that wasn't a laugh line, that wasn't a line to cheer at, I just had to pause to check. Don't become the enemy. That's the terror. A horrible outcome of the era we live in would be nuclear war. Another bad outcome would be racism, intolerance, violence, genocide, ethnic cleansing, nationalism, triumphalism. And a less bad outcome, but no more acceptable outcome would be a cold civil war, let's say, where, let's say, this president is elected out in 3 more years or 7 more years, and a Democratic president or another Republican president comes in, and we live through another era, more or less, like Gingrich and Clinton or Obama and McConnell, where no one speaks to each other anymore, where people don't address each other anymore. That's a terrifying outcome to me. That's the end of American democracy. To quote Robin Brown, that's anarchy. So again, I don't know what the answer is, but I know what the answers can't be. They can't be violence and brinkmanship that lead us to nuclear confrontation with a poor country. They can't be nationalism, triumphalism, and bigotry that exclude. My wife is managing a house for Sarah Rosenberg. I don't know if you remember. She was in our community for a while and moved back to Denver. And Karen is managing the house and to the renters. And there was a very nice renter for quite a while. And one of the very last conversations Karen had with him as he moved out was, I don't know how it came up, but that came up that I'm a rabbi and that she's Jewish. And his reaction was, oh, that's wonderful that you're Jewish. That's my other favorite thing. Another parenthetical is when people say, it's so great that you're Jewish. And I think, I had nothing to do with that. And he says, we have a common enemy, Islam. That's okay. I just laughed when she told me. I said, thank God he's moving out. That's not how this works. You don't just batten down the hatches and stay in your bunker and make everyone else the enemy. You can't. Apparently there's a documentary on Netflix about an African-American man going to meet KKK people, thinking, is this true or is someone just guessing? I haven't seen it yet, and I think it's sort of a quixotic adventure, but it's interesting. I'll leave you with a few blessings and a hope that evil can be overcome on our side and theirs. I don't know what it will take. Certainly we'll need to call evil by its name, but maybe do so without yelling and without demonizing the other side, maybe. Without violence, maintaining our best selves, holding to the better angels of our nature, and not getting caught up in the evil that swells around us, but being moral exemplars nonetheless. As Jews, frankly, we didn't deserve to be Jews. There's nothing special about us, but we are called by our Torah to be a light to other nations, to strive to be the best that we can be. So I'll leave you with a few blessings. The very first phrase in the Parsha is, Re'eh Anochi Noten Lifnechem Hayom Bracha Uklala. Look out, look, today I give you a blessing and a curse. And Yonatan ben Uziel, one of the early translators, says, it's a blessing and it's transmutation. Which is to say, you can pervert a blessing, but I think also implied is the ability to transmute curse. That wickedness, that racism, that violence need not be forever our state. That piece of our nature, intrinsic as it may be, embedded in our biology as it may be, can be, if not suppressed, then at least maintained. We're given the verse that is the cornerstone of our justice system that appears again and again in Talmud Sanhedrin, Darashta Hakarta Sha'alta Hetev. Inquire, discover, and ask carefully. Ask well. That's how you maintain rule of law. Question constantly, don't assume. And again, from the other verse I read, have no regrets. Don't yera levavcha, don't let your heart become wicked. Don't wickedize your heart. And the Rosh, one of our medieval commentators, says, let there not be yeush, despair, forgetting, for God lives and remains. Keep your spirit up. Keep your mind clear and precise. Don't let these wicked times infect you. And keep your eyes clear for the solution, which I don't yet know.